On today's episode, we are going to talk about what is our goals, aspirations,
what we would like to see the future of both of us head to. So listen in.
Let's talk about death, baby. Let's talk about grief and mourning. Is it argumental or existential? What's it mean to me? Let's talk about death.
Nicholas Cabal, psychologist.
Hey, Nick, let's talk about death.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about something different today, all right? So I would imagine that some people out there, not everybody, but I would imagine some people out there want to know what are our aspirations, what are our goals, what are our dreams.
I see so much ahead because I think one of the big things that I noticed from the old guard, which I truthfully respect all the old funeral directors that have been doing this for a long time and all the families they've taken care of.
So let me ask you this. Do they call themselves that?
They do. They do call themselves
the old
guard.
Is that like a term of endearment?
It is, and I'm not part of it yet.
So when do you become part of the old guard?
So I just passed 10 years, so I'm not the new. I'm not the rookie.
You're mid-grade right now.
I'm nothing special. You've been doing it long enough.
You're the middle shelf.
We'll listen to you, but you know, yeah, nothing. See, that's a problem. It's just like everything else, right? You don't get say until it's too late, right? And then you're like, oh, I didn't even know.
You've graduated from the.
It's just like I realize when I'm going to talk to the high schoolers here in the next couple of weeks, they're literally 18 years old, and we've been out of school in like 18 years.
You're not an arrow booze anymore.
When we graduated, these kids were born.
And is
that's weird to think about. So anyways, what I was going back to this, I think the old guard funeral directors got into funeral directing. That was it, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be a funeral director. I'm going to be a really damn good funeral director. And then someday I'll retire, right? Or maybe I'll just die in the funeral home. You know, that's the old guard. I look at being a funeral director as a step someplace possibly else. Now, will it be still in the funeral home? Probably absolutely, because I can't see myself leaving the funeral. I can't see myself leaving Cabal Funeral Home one way or another. The entity is here. I am installed in this. But I do think that I have learned so much about life from this profession that I understand that sometimes you got to go out and do things to really help the cause, right? And I think, Doc, what we started here opened up a huge can of worms, right? In a good way. People don't have this conversation and don't have the, and I'm not trying to toot our own horns, but we have the credentials to be absolutely talking about this and have a good platform for people to listen to us. I think because of how death has basically formed me, death has formed my personality, has formed the person I am, and has formed the beliefs that I have, morals, ethics, et cetera, et cetera. I think I need to somehow get out there. Now, whether that means just this podcast or maybe it means doing a couple like tours where we go around talking to individuals, or maybe we have a couple books that come out in the future, or maybe we are professors later, or however that works. I would love to put my foot into something that even can help out 10% of how people grieve. And now, nationally, internationally, who knows what that means? I don't know. And I think the future is so bright on that, Doc. I don't know. When I took I think I've talked about this. I took one of those European tests where it tells you what you should be doing.
The European one?
I don't remember where it was, but I remember it was lengthy. It took me about an hour to do. And literally the two things were politician and funeral director, which I thought was very interesting because that is, I find myself, there's things that sometimes you got to go into politics to be able to accomplish. So I also have always been interested in political science. And honestly, when it comes to how America deals with death and grief, we do it very poorly. So it would be nice to have some, I don't know, lobbying or some future endeavors with getting some of the thoughts that we have, Doc, like giving more time for grief leave. Or being able to have better insurances or diagnoses on things due to grief. You know, we've talked about that. And that's partly knowing the people that I know and being able to work with colleagues that are in other fields and professions to help me jumpstart that. My aspirations is to keep doing what we're doing. It would be nice to do it on a larger scale, and it would be nice to talk to more people. But I realize even in the small town, every year that I'm a funeral director, I'm talking to 3,000 more people. Right. So eventually that small pool of Ida, Michigan broadens a lot further. And I've noticed that I'm already now, you know. Now, we're also theatrical kids, so we're also in bands. We're also doing extra YouTube channels, et cetera, et cetera. So not only is it just the podcast and me being a funeral director, it's also me getting into all these associations, helping out these nonprofits. So my goal is to get my hands at anything that I can. Now, I also realize, Doc, and this is the tricky part that I've talked to a lot of you and also other business mentors of mine. To have the credentials I have to be a funeral director. To be able to talk and to be able to be really listened to and to be able to bring in real life scenarios, I have to be doing this. And I have to be doing it in a way that it's a normalcy that I'm a funeral director, right? You don't want to say I'm a funeral director, I have a license, but I haven't practiced in 30 years, because there's no credential really to that. But if I'm saying, yeah, I go on these university tours every once in a while, but when I go home the 8 months of the year, I'm funeral directing. I'm getting in there. I'm doing what I do and I've been doing and my family's been doing. So where I see this being huge, whether that means death education in high school, which has been my big thing that I've always wanted to have, is to have some sort of course, as in like sex education, like have a death and grief and loss education in high school. Or it means, like I said, giving people a mandatory week off for grief. And that's even sad. But 2 days is just, I in my opinion, irresponsible of us as a nation and how we deal with grief. So that's kind of my start. You have any thoughts on that?
On you? Well, I got quite a few thoughts on you. We don't have time for that. There's a couple of things I would love to accomplish, but I also have accomplished so much so far in my life, and I'm very proud of the accomplishments that I made. You know, I've gotten multiple degrees. That was a lot of hard work, and there's a lot of times where I didn't know if I was going to make it through. So I guess one thing that I've really tried to cherish lately is to really take a look at my accomplishments so far. But like, if we're talking about future stuff, right, I would love to write a theory. write a theory for some sort of psychology with grief work. I want to continue to be part of nonprofits and help out as much as I can. You know, my dad was a firm believer in, you know, if you take care of your community, they'll take care of you. And I just enjoy helping people. Obviously, I'm a therapist. I also want to help new therapists, especially ones that are interested in getting involved in grief work.
Yeah, baby.
There's a lot of things that I think I could really mentor with how to guide them through some of the first couple of years of doing this kind of work. It is absolutely a calling, and it is not easy. I would also like to bridge, let's talk about death, you know, coming up with a theory of all this stuff into a Kapal entity. I would like to get something like the Bereavement Brothers or something.
Ooh.
Like that.
Ooh, I like that.
I guess my goal not only is to practice and help people, you know, individuals, but also to educate people in general. And I'm going to say education versus academia, because I think academia is great, but I also think academia is very pricey, and it doesn't allow everybody to learn. Whereas if I, you know, went around and educated people, that's for all, not just people that are lucky enough or blessed enough to go to school. And I also want to get part into, with that being said, I want to get somehow involved in education, in the fact that I want to be part of it, so that being a part of it, I can change it. Because there is some things I have been discouraged about going through. I mean, obviously you all can figure that I've gone through my doctorate. So I've gone, you know, the long haul, and I've seen a lot of things that unfortunately I've had to deal with, or my colleagues or my other co-classmates have had to deal with, that is very disenfranchising. And I want to change that, but I understand that to change that, I have to do it within, not from the outside. So that's one other goal I would like to do. Whether I do that or not, that's, you know, I would like to try to change some of that stuff. And then at the end, I do actually, this sounds crazy, but I absolutely do want to retire working part-time at the funeral home. So that will be my end. So, and maybe be one of those people that actually die working. So,
and it'd be super cool, Doc, didn't mean to end you there, but it'd be super cool if one or all of our children decide to follow a career path in grief, whether that be a funeral director, psychologist, doula, hospice worker. And even if they didn't, even if they can go out and still spread the good news on good grief.
So I'm gonna take that a step further, because, you know, blood isn't not necessarily brothers too, you know, like if we can get people to kind of take the cross from us at the end of our time,
right?
And you know, whether don't get me wrong, I would love to pass it on to my children, but I also understand that this is not, this career and this life work is not for everybody. And I would never want to force my kids to do it, nor would I want them to feel like they have to.
I agree.
So if you're listening 20 years from now to this episode, Nicholas and Millie, so far, I'm hoping to have more children, but this, I don't ever want you to feel like you need to do this unless you want to or feel like you need to. So
no, and invade enrollment on my end, like just having them has helped me be a better professional when it comes to death and grief too. So, you know, honestly, what's interesting about what you and I both said is basically we both want to help the future professionals. We both want to interiorly change how education is addressed. And so there's both political standpoints in that, because when it comes to academia, you have to somewhat cross that bridge. And honestly, at the end of the day, we want the world to grieve better. We want the world to grieve better. And I think the bereavement, I keep going back to the bereavement brothers. Woo. Again, it's wordy, but it's got a little fun to it. I don't know. And I think from our father and our grandfather and our great-grandfather, we were handed tools that we can do now in a world where we can talk to so many people so quickly like this, right? They didn't have that opportunity. They didn't have a podcast where they could talk to somebody in Switzerland and Germany and
well, that's
Venezuela.
Why I mean, I feel so humble and blessed that we're able to do this. We have the resources to do this, you know, to have you, to have a brother that's as interested and passionate as
good-looking,
I am.
Good-looking, sophisticated.
Yeah, that's subjective. But I also, you know, we're very blessed to have all the people around us that are supporting us and allowing us to do this. And, you know, what a lot of the listeners don't know is we actually do this in the funeral home. So,
yeah, so
to
be you,
able,
Dad,
yeah,
thanks, for the electricity
thanks,
bill.
Thanks, Dad. And, you know, Kelly, our producer, who has really taught us and continues to motivate us to do what we need to do and get the word out. But lastly, I do want to thank the listener, because obviously we wouldn't be doing this without you. But in fairness, I think we still would be doing this. We'd just talking
probably.
To a wall.
We'd be talking to a wall. It'd be us talking to Kapali, and he'd be thanking us for it.
But you know, I'm very humble. I'm very honored and blessed, and I would love to see this thing blow up and go viral, if you will. But like, at the same time, patience is a virtue,
well,
and grief is not an easy conversation to have.
Well, and Doc, even if we help one person through grief, I think we're okay.
Well, you helped me, Benny.
Well, thank you. You helped me too, and you helped me keep on track, which is it's a hard job.
That is
you know, honestly though, this episode it made me really delve into kind of where we stand on this. You know, we don't really, I mean, we talk about this, but we don't really delve into future aspirations like that. So it was cool to hear that. And to be honest, I think if the listener hasn't caught it on yet, like, we really care about this grief topic. Like, we really care about helping others try to figure this out. And I think ultimately for us to be good at it, we have to challenge ourselves. And so thank you all of you out there that have been giving us questions and thoughts. And
maybe every 72 episodes, we do another
another career dream.
Because I mean, and that's the truth too, right? It's going to change. You know, we're opening. I feel, and maybe this is my subjective experience, I feel like we're opening a lot of doors that me and Benny aren't even aware yet. No. You know, and again, I hope we are the trailblazers.
Yeah, maybe. That, the bereavement brothers.
The bereavement brothers, the trailblazers for, you know, death and talking about it and exploring it. And again, just normalizing it. I think that's the key.
Well, and I think for all of you, instead of a question this time, if you send us anything, send us your aspirations. And if any of you are interested in either anything to do with the grief path, whether it be funeral director or whether it be psychologist or psychiatrist therapist, counselor, doctor, hospice nurse, death doula, like, you know, send it our way. We'd be really interested in that. And, you know, if you have any just thoughts on death, please send it at letstalkaboutdeathpod@gmail.com.
Cue the Q&As.
We got a Q&A to talk about.
Let's talk about the Q&A, baby. Q&A, Q&A, everyone loves
that Q&A. Q's and A's, Q and A. You gotta give me that. Sometimes we miss the Q&A. Here we go. I'm going to my first funeral tomorrow. What should I do to prepare myself? The funeral is for my mom's friend's son, who died from an overdose. My mom and her friend haven't spoken in a couple of years, and I haven't seen her in 2 to 3 years. Anyways, my mom asked me to accompany her to the funeral, and I don't know how to handle the situation when I get there. I don't want to burst out laughing or anything like that. I'm not that type of person to disrespect like that ever. I'm quite emotional, if anything. Any tips for preparation?
You know, it's interesting. The first thing that I think of is you are going into a situation. You are going into another world, if you will, because we're talking about an overdose. We're talking about your mom and her friend have not spoken in a while. So that's going to be interesting. That could be a little awkward. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. It could be a little bit awkward. But I think that the key is, in anything, be yourself. You know, you talk about this laughter, and this is an interesting topic, and maybe we should have an episode on this. A lot of people I've heard are worried about laughing in the funeral home. And it's like, to me, I think laughter is one of the most healing things that us humans can do. And again, to an extent, and there's some, you know, caveats to that. But to be honest with you, like, nobody is going to, in my opinion, is going to judge you if your laughter is real and it's heartfelt.
Yeah, it's genuine. And 9 out of 10, Doc, and you can you live above the funeral home, but you've been enough funerals. 9 out of 10 funerals, laughter is in the funeral. One way or another, whether it's a family member that came on and said, "Oh, Tony did this."
Well, that's normally your go-to for your speechers, right?
You're going to
get someone. Ooh, you're going to get someone who either very good speaker, or you're going to get someone who can
just a goofball, the class clown, right? Yeah.
It's just going to break the ice. It's going to get people a little bit less uncomfortable.
Yeah, it lightens the mood. It really does.
And you could feel it, right? Because the tension, especially at the beginning of a funeral, can be pretty thick.
But I can understand with a extreme tragedy like overdose, mm-hmm. where laughter would be very scary if you're not. Well, and this is the first one, right? I'm going to my first funeral.
Oh, I didn't even catch that one.
So,
you're right.
Ooh. So, A, we've talked about this, Doc. When you talk to kids, one of the big things that people don't do is kind of set the scene. What they're going to be right. in, like, this is what a funeral looks like. Because even if this is an adult, if they've never been to a funeral, how do you expect them to know what a funeral is, other than from movies and media?
And again, if you're respectful, you're going and being heartfelt and compassionate, empathetic person, you should have no worries. However, though, it is interesting because if we talk about a first, right, most people in their first experience of anything are going to be nervous. They're going to be anxious. Yep. They're going to be overwhelmed. So let's normalize that, right? Your first experience of a funeral home, and you're going into a probably, and that, again, who knows, you might show up and it's a whole different scenario. Because again, I always say this, I think our brains, most people's creativity is more scarier.
Yeah. The
than
imagination
reality,
is a lot scarier.
Right. And again, you, if you're going off of what you've been told or what you have seen on, you know, HBO about, you know, grief and loss, HBO. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're not sponsored yet. So,
well, HBO, if you're listening, reach out to Dr. Kapal and the Bereavement Brothers.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Like, you have no idea. And that's where the scare is, right? That's where the fear is. You don't know something until you're there. You're going out of your way to help your mother go through this experience too. So,
but also it's a great opener for you. Just, you know, maybe you just go there and experience. Just
yeah,
be
there you
there.
Go.
Look, I one of the things I always say being part of the funeral home is one of the most influential parts of being a part of the funeral family is that I've been able to people watch. I've been able to sit in a corner, you know, doing the job as, you know, helping out my dad and brothers.
And not being awkward.
And not being, trying not to be awkward. But like at the same time, like watching, it's such a multitude of different emotions, and depending on the family, it could be a multitude in that room. Some families tend to be more, you know, more mellow. Some families are loud and obnoxious. Some families, are very gracious and, there's, you know, and going back, there's also the sloppy,
there's the sludge boots.
Sludge boots.
And no, to be honest, there's the family that literally one side of the room is one side of the family and one side is the other, and they do not cross that line. But yeah, I this is an amazing experience for you, and you know, take it for what it is. You're going with your mom too, so you have also somebody to support you in this situation. So do what you feel comfortable with. Don't do what you're not comfortable with, but also be there to experience it, because there is a funeral is a very interesting experience. And I think if you know, we talked about this, Doc, it's kind of like a wedding. Sometimes you get so in flustered with everything else, you tend to forget the actual experience. You know, I hear it all the time. In fact, I don't remember much of grandma's funeral because I think either I've repressed it or I just was so busy with everything else, my brain just didn't comprehend it. But I think that's it. We get so up in everything else that we forget to smell the flowers, right? We forget to actually be a part of it. And whether or not you're awkward about going, it'll mean a lot to not only the family, but it'll mean a lot to your mother. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for being vulnerable.
And I would also challenge you to go and talk to the funeral director, because he's probably sitting in there, standing in a corner or opening doors for people. And we all like to talk too, you know. So
yeah, compliment him on something or her if the funeral home looks.
You don't have
nice
to compliment her. Just, well, just talk. Just say, hey, how we doing?
Anyways. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for all your questions. If you have any more thoughts, or maybe it's your first funeral, or maybe you've never been to a funeral. If you've never been to a funeral visitation, send us an email at letstalkaboutdeathpod@gmail.com. Now, if you are really struggling and you need a great resource, you can go to the Grief Works app, and you can head to illumapps.com/LTAD for 15% off. It's an amazing app with professionals that will help you go through grief in your own way. So take a look at, take a gander at it. It's really awesome. As always, send us your reviews, your likes, your comments. Maybe send us a good playlist, a good song that you're into nowadays. We're really big music fans. And as always, if you are not talking about death,
then you are not living. Thank you so much.